إبراهيم فكير، السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته.
وعليكم السلام ورحمة الله وبركاته.
How are you doing?
الحمد لله يسلمك.
الحمد لله. Well, inevitably, we stick with focusing on COVID-19, especially from a socio-behavioral, political, economical, and governance perspective. There's been a sharp rise in community transmissions and the number of COVID-19 positive cases continue to spike, but then the social and economic costs also continue to rise. It would appear, Ibrahim, as government was wholly unprepared for this, despite the daily updates in the first few weeks of the lockdown. How prepared are we? That's the burning question, isn't it?
Gosh, Molana, I must be honest. I wonder if we can ever be fully prepared. To be honest, obviously, we know we believe in the unseen and the unknown sometimes, and this is one such instance in which there are a whole range of unknowns. And so, I don't think it is possible for any country, any society to be fully and completely prepared. So even think about the well-developed northern countries, for example. Take Sweden as a case in point. You know, very high levels of equality. Everyone's relatively well off. The society is well-resourced, the government's well-resourced, there's good skills, good healthcare, and so on. And, they adopted an approach which took the herd immunity approach, and they weren't terribly well prepared. So many other societies are not. And so I don't think anyone can be fully well prepared. But that said, if you really think about it, suddenly there are reports that there aren't enough hospital beds. The ICUs are completely full. That the temporary field hospitals, so to speak, only have certain capacity and can't carry a patient load beyond a certain type of specification. So in very serious cases, they are not going to be able to cope with those kind of patients. And then you've got to ask yourself, well, if the initial lockdown was meant for both a delaying of the spike, as you rightly call it, which we're now seeing, and buying time to make adequate preparation, then one's got to ask what kind of preparations were being made. Hmm. Because, people talk about the field hospitals, but you hear that the field hospitals don't have any capacity to ventilate or to provide oxygen. Suddenly, they now have to be converted. Some of those units have to be converted, and they will take some time to do so. As an emergency, a few will be converted immediately. So that's the first, just the ordinary top-line preparation. Second, if you think about the staff which are required to run those kind of places, clearly no thought was given to that with regard to recruitment or temporary quick training and so on. Third, the ameliorative social care which is required, which you would think a government which cares would think is one of its primary responsibilities. And suddenly, you're now here, and all of us were very keen to donate, to provide assistance and so on. You're now here of warehouses full of food, which simply didn't get out either because of ineptitude or because of red tape. And then you ask yourself, well, again, there was a lockdown, and all of this was meant for preparation and preparatory purposes. And so how do you end up in a situation of this sort? So, I think the short answer is perhaps it's the perennial, perpetual South African story. We speak, but when it comes to actually putting things in place and doing what it's supposed to be doing, or even doing the basics of what we promised we were going to do, we simply don't do it. So it does seem that on that scale, no, we didn't prepare sufficiently, even from the things we have known. And, if you think about, just think about today's headlines, which I'm sure are going to come through, is remember there were those scooters which were procured as ambulances and as things which would drop off medicines as mobile units. They looked like scooters which are covered. And it was launched with great fanfare in the Eastern Cape by the very Minister of Health that we were talking about. And today, the Minister of Health is saying those are inappropriate for that purpose. So which is it? It's great and it's useful. It's inappropriate. So, you know, you do get the sense that there's a little bit of hypocrisy covering up, and so on. Look, no society would have been fully prepared, but it doesn't seem as if, at least from a government perspective, we did everything we should. As a society, that's a different question. Society is made up of individuals. Individuals often show atypical behavior, and we've got some people, obviously, who listened, who social distance, who wore masks, who washed their hands, who sanitized, who took precautions, who took care. Others who didn't. Those who believed in conspiracy theories, that it was a hoax, that, you know, it's nothing more than a mild flu that isn't terribly devastating, that most likely people will be immune from it, that the symptoms, even if they get it, will be mild. And I don't think they prepared enough. I don't think individuals took enough precautionary measures. As is the case with something of this nature, sometimes you or I may take precautions. And that's like when you're driving a car. You've got to drive for yourself and you've got to drive for the opposite party. So individuals, you find some of them who did take care, but were dependent, were at the mercy of others who didn't take care. And therefore they got susceptible despite the precautions that they took. So, you know, at the individual level, at the communal societal level, again, there was a lot of messaging, but none of that messaging was reinforced, or it doesn't seem a lot of it was taken to heart.
Now, obviously, with resources and capacity strained, what other interventions may be possible, or some might even argue necessary at this stage?
Well, one would think. Sorry, Mark, for that. Well, one would think that at this stage, the kind of personal precautions one's got to take, social distance, wear your mask, sanitize, keep away from crowded places for as far as possible, ventilate, as they say. As now, you know, again, this week you discovered something new, at least scientists did that. They believe some of it may in fact be transmitted through airborne particles. Before, it was thought that actually the particles just settled on the surface. So there's those ordinary interventions. At a societal level, we've got to take cognizance of the fact that some behavioral change is going to be absolutely necessary first. Second is, you know, and I think we've spoken about this before, is we've got to reimagine what this idea of solidarity is. That solidarity can't just be about, well, I'm going to give charity, we're going to help people out where we can, we're going to do this and this. But we've got to change behavior in the way that I alluded to earlier. As in the case of driving, you've got to drive defensively, because you drive for yourself and you drive for the opposite party. In this case, you've got to behave in a way in which you try not to get the virus. And if you perhaps have it and be asymptomatic, you've got to behave in ways in which you minimize the risk of transmitting it, which requires the kind of behavioral change. Third is, you know, you can make as much preparation as you would like in terms of finances, in terms of socioeconomic, in terms of provisioning and self-protection. That's going to be necessary within one's means, within what's affordable to do so. And lastly, we've got to reimagine the idea of solidarity in terms of what we can do to ameliorate and help other people in terms of charitable acts and so on. And so the idea of solidarity, which only applies to my group, to people like me, to people of my religion, to people of my race, to people of my gender, to people of my age group, whatever solidarity markers you choose for people who are like you, those going to have to extend, because the devastating consequences are being felt by so many. Yes, look at the number of businesses closing, the number of jobs which are going to be lost. And much of it may have been avoidable had we had more prudent government, had we had more accountability, but also if we took a little more personal responsibility. So some of those things, unfortunately, you know, are going to be interventions which are necessary. And one doesn't know how much more public messaging you can do in this regard. One does one's best, and then you've got to leave it up to individuals, I'm afraid.
And finally, the political parties and business, how have they responded?
Clearly not not many businesses have responded very well. Some of them have done exactly the unethical kind of things we expected them to do, which they tried to profit off it. So far as government can be corrupt, businesses can be corrupt too. They haven't made adequate preparation in terms of saving jobs, in terms of prolonging what they can do. Certainly, a lack of creative thinking on all sides. And there are some creative things that can be done. Some of those require very bold intervention, something that we can't really imagine always. But we've got to start thinking of moving to longer hours. And by longer hours, I mean business that they're open for longer, that they have to work slightly harder. Of course, it requires sacrifice among some of their workers who have to work slightly longer hours. But there, too, you could rotate shifts, you could reduce pay and cross-subsidize other jobs for a few more hours. Of course, so everyone here has to start taking a little bit of pay, but at least there's some sharing going around. Government services have to extend their hours for longer. Public servants might need to have to, at least frontline public servants may have to work slightly more in order to be able to cope with these kind of things. Those kind of interventions, both across government and across business, is going to be required. And political parties, I'm afraid you ask one another, it seems like they lapsed, lapsed in exactly what we expected them to do. The EFF, very quiet. The DA, everything should open up and everything's government's fault. The ANC, doing what the ANC does, taking responsibility in word but not in deed. And so eventually, they lapsed into their familiar patterns of politicking, using the pandemic for political and politicking purposes, showing everyone up. Of course, Parliament has now come to the party. So the last day we spoke, and I just written the article in which I said, well, where is Parliament in doing its oversight and accountability duties? Yes. They started doing things virtually. But even there, they're talking about all the wrong things instead of the things that they should be doing. So no fundamental real oversight, no looking at the patterns of expenditure, no real accountability for those people who are doing wrong, such as stealing even basic things like food parcels or over expenditure on procurement and so on. So, again, we've said this and we have to unfortunately repeat it. The society has to mature all around, politically, economically, even in terms of our own individual responsibility and so on. And hopefully, then we, inshallah, we still have to hope for the best.
All right, Ibrahim, we'll talk again soon, inshallah. Jazakumullah for your time.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was this week's Asri Report with Ibrahim.